Well, my guest tonight at the big table is one of my favorites. Ron O.J. Parson is a longtime theater director here in Chicago. He's got a new play at the Windy City Playhouse, the Chicago premiere of Jeff Daniels' Apartment 3A. Apartment 3A is a romantic comedy about the day in the life of the main character, Annie, who deals with a breakup, a bad day at work, and all sorts of other experiences before meeting a neighbor who changes her life, again, all in one day. But you know what? That's not enough for Parson. Nope, he's working on another show, East Texas Hot Links by Eugene Lee. It's going to be at the Writers Theater later in October. He's doing them simultaneously. It's actually a remount of a show that Parson and the Onyx Theater did 20 years ago. Parson is an artistic director at the new Onyx Theater Project and a resident artist at the Court Theater. He's worked everywhere in Chicago. Goodman, Steppenwolf, Black Ensemble Theater, you name it. Parson has worked there, and he's my guest at the big table. Ron, good to see you. Thanks
good
for being
here. Good to
see
you. Good to be here. I love it.
All right. So let's first talk about Apartment 3A.
Yeah,
Tell us about what drew you to this. I mean, as a director, you get to choose the projects you work on.
Actually, with this one, Amy Rubenstein at the Windy City Playhouse, the hot new theater in town, she sent me a few scripts and to see if I would be interested. And I read the Apartment 3A, and I was intrigued. And I had a couple other people read it and say what they think, that people I trust their opinion. And everybody was like, hey, this is fun. This would be great. And so once I got into it, it was even more fun. You know, you said, romantic comedy, but it has a lot of layers. And me being a Twilight Zone fanatic, I said, wow, this reminds me of Rod Serling, you know, even though it's a quirky kind of thing. But I love that kind of mysterious kind of feel to a play. And so, you know, I said, yeah, this is great. And then I love magic. So I said, I think I can fit some magic tricks in here, some sleight of hand.
For you as a director, as a theater director, I mean, is there one genre you like more than the other? I mean,
well, yeah,
drama?
I would have to say I didn't think that, but suspense thriller, I like that, you know. And I've done I studied film at college, and I don't know how I got into theater and got away from it, but you know, that was my thing in film, you know, the suspense and the film noir and that kind of thing. So in the theater, I love to do that, too, to take the audience on a ride. And that's what, you know, this play is, like I say, it's a romantic comedy. It's got a lot of love in it, a lot of, you know, we all go through those situations in our lives and our work day and, you know. But this one adds another element to it with those kind of mysterious.
Well, let me
things.
Ask. I mean, as a director, I mean, how much do you have to mind the comedy? I mean, when you keep saying romantic comedy, for you, I mean, you really have to get the actors and the stage production to be
that's
funny.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, good writers can do that. They can mix the humor and the seriousness. Like, I direct a lot of August Wilson plays. And August Wilson plays have a lot of humor. And people say, oh, well, it's funny. It's a comedy. I said, no, it's not a comedy. It's got humor in it because we have humor in our life, even when we're going through, you know, crazy periods and chaotic periods or breakups or love affairs that don't go right and this and that, you still have to laugh. And that's what this play does. You know, it she's working in public broadcasting. So, you know, that's stressful in itself. So,
yeah, I know,
you know, and so she's going through all of this at the same time during a fundraising drive. So anybody who's been in there,
I think we could thank Jeff Daniels for an actual play about pledge drives.
Right.
We've been waiting for one of
exactly.
those. Right?
Exactly. So that's where they're during a pledge drive during the play. So it has its element of seriousness, but it's funny. It's got both.
Now for you, I mean, as I mentioned in the lead, I mean, you're also doing East Texas Hot Links at the Writers Theater. For you to be able to balance as a director two shows at once, I mean, that's got to be so hard to be able to not only balance just the organization of when rehearsals are, but for you to actually dig deep into the text and to stage things and to come up with ideas. I mean, are you finding yourself like up at night coming up with ideas for the wrong play?
Well, you know, that has happened to me before. In fact, one time years ago, not to get off on a tangent, but I was doing two shows at the same time. One was in St. Louis. And, you know, so I would do three days in Chicago, and I'd fly to St. Louis and do 4 days there that week and then fly back and do another 4 days here. And then, you know, so it got kind of crazy. At one time, I was like, which airport am I in? Which city am I in? So it did happen. That was quite a while ago. I was a little younger. So now at least it's in the same city. But, you know, these two plays, they're very different. And the East Texas play, I know the cast so well that and it's the fifth time I've directed the play because it's one of my favorite plays. It's a great play. And the fact that I'm older now, I can, you know, be a little bit more, find different things in it that I couldn't find before. Yeah, for sure. But directing both of them at the same time was very challenging. We'd be all morning at the Writers, and then I'd take the Metro. Luckily, the Metro is right by the theater. And then I would come back down and get off and then ride right over to the Windy City and do that. So luckily, it's opening Thursday, so I can settle on just one play. But they're both, you know, very enjoyable and entertaining plays. But East Texas, to back to the genre, is more like that suspense kind of thriller thing. So it's great.
Well, East Texas Hot Links will be on stage at the Writers Theater coming up in the end of October. Apartment 3A is opening at the Windy City Playhouse this Thursday, right?
Right.
This Thursday, Windy City Playhouse. Ron O.J. Parson, my guest in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to get at how you got into theater and get to some of the secrets of how long you've been able to sustain a career here in Chicago. Let's do that. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk with Ron. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my guest at the big table tonight, Ron O.J. Parson, longtime theater director. His show, Apartment 3A, is at the Windy City Playhouse, opens Thursday. He's also doing East Texas Hot Links, which is by Eugene Neal.
Eugene Lee.
Got that right. Eugene Lee, it's at the Writers Theater later in October. It's a 20th anniversary remount from the Onyx Theater, which is a good way to start to talk about your career.
Yeah.
Because you came to Chicago in the mid-90s.
I did.
Talk about how you got here.
It's funny, you know, I'm from Buffalo, New York, and I was living in New York City at the time, you know, trying to make my way as an actor, actually. And things weren't going the way that I felt. You know, I was in college. I was a big man on campus in the theater program at the University of Michigan. I thought, oh, wow, it'll be easy. You go to New York and become a star. And it didn't happen that way. So I went back to Buffalo and got involved in the theater. And a good friend of mine, his name is Stephen McKinley Henderson. He's now a major kind of Broadway guy. He works all over. He suggested Chicago. He just said, you know, he worked here with Bob Falls when Bob was at Wisdom Bridge. And so he told me, you know, I've never lived in Chicago, but it's a great theater town. You should go check it out. So luckily, the way things happened, I had a friend who actually founded Onyx with me. His name is Alfred Wilson. He was the marketing director at the Goodman. And he said, you know, I can get you an audition to a play called I Am a Man. It's written by this guy, Oyamo. I said, Oyamo? I know Oyamo. I knew him from New York. And he said, yeah, well, it's his play, and a guy named Miriam McClinton's directed. Anyway, get you an audition. Got an audition. I told my girlfriend at the time, I said, you know, I'm going to Chicago to audition for a play. If I get in it, I'm going to stay. She said, yeah, I'll come with you and this and that. So it's a funny story because I got cast, you know, and I was shocked. And I called her. I said, hey.
You remember what I said?
Yeah, we're ready. Can you come? And she said, are you crazy? I can't leave Buffalo. I said, she said, I didn't think you were going to get that, you know. So anyway, I decided to do it anyway, and I moved here. And one thing led to another. Alfred and I started Onyx Theater. And I said, well, we didn't really have an infrastructure. We didn't really know what to do. He was at, you know, marketing director at the Goodman. So he's very busy. And I said, well, let's try a play. And I called a friend of mine. His name is Ruben Santiago Hudson. He's a, you know, major player in New York. He directs all over and acts. He's on TV, everything. And he said, East Texas Hot Links, man, you guys should do it. They did it in 92 or something, so it was still fresh. And, man, we did that play, and wow, and it just took off. Well, I think Michael saw it. That's why we're doing it.
Well, the Onyx was short-lived. I mean, it was only like a 4 or 5 year.
Exactly. Man, you know your stuff.
What
man.
Was it like? What was it like doing theater in Chicago in the mid-90s, early 90s? Well, I mean, talk about that experience for you coming here from Buffalo.
Well, it was what we call guerrilla theater. You know, we kind of just... In fact, the first time we did East Texas Hot Links, we probably had, you know, $5,000 to $7,000, something like that. Some ungodly figure that we didn't think we could do it. But, you know, we got actors. We weren't Equity then, so we didn't have to worry about that. And it was hard. You know, there wasn't you know, the diversity discussion that's going on now, it really wasn't. It was like black theater, it was like black ensemble, Impact, ETA, you know, Chicago Theater Company. So there were kind of well-known theaters, but there wasn't a lot of mixing at the major theaters and things that there is now. So it was difficult to get the support. A lot of the funding money went to the big theaters. It didn't really go to the small theaters. But I tell you, if it wasn't for the Joyce Foundation, we wouldn't have made it. And actually, the Joyce Foundation still supports me at Court Theater. So I'm on a Joyce Foundation grant at Court Theater as a resident artist, and they've been supportive of me throughout my career here in town. So that was one thing that Onyx was able to survive with that.
When you started Onyx, and this would be 94, 95, 96.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about the concept of starting your own theater company. You were living in New York City, so you knew theater. What were the differences between doing theater in New York and doing theater here in Chicago?
One thing in Chicago, it was more accessible. New York City was a lot different, a lot of more, I guess, red tape for doing things. Beth and I were talking earlier about just the difference in attitude of the artists and the producers. It's more stress and pressure. You know, Chicago, we were able to do it and kind of not, I don't say relax, but we didn't have the same kind of pressure. We could just do it. And if it worked, it worked. If it didn't, it didn't, you know, but we enjoyed doing it. That's why there's so many storefront theaters here. People get out of college and they have a group of people that they've worked with in school and they say, let's start a theater, you know, and it's easier to do here just in that sense, you know, because of the finances and what it costs to rent a storefront,
right,
and things like that. So that way it was more accessible, but you know, it's still hard because, you know, you're trying to get, you know, marketing out there, because marketing is important as doing the play, you know.
So you got to get butts in seats.
Exactly. And if you don't have the marketing plan, it's not going to work. So that was difficult. And that was why we lasted 5 years. We were all doing other things. Lydia Diamond, who was a founding member, is now a major playwright in the country. And, you know, Marcia Estelle, she's working as a playwright and actress. Alfred, of course, has gone on to become one of the actors in town that works a lot. So, you know, we all did our own thing, and eventually we just got out there. And
let me ask you, you know, we always get kind of bypassed when you talk about theater companies, but what's really important about a theater company is how you all sort of come together, the chemistry in the ensemble, that whether it be a director and a playwright and a designer and a stage director, but an actor, they all come together. What was it about the Onyx Theater Company, the group of actors and theater professionals that you were working with at that time, that drew you guys together?
Wow, that's a great question. Alfred, because I knew him from Flint, Michigan. He was an actor and director, producer at the in Flint, where we did a theater called McCree Theater. So I met him in college, actually, at Michigan, but then we lost touch, and then I ended up getting a job in Flint, and I kind of rekindled a relationship with some of my old buddies. So when he moved here, like, I think in the 80s, and I moved to New York. So we just kind of got back together, and then he had known people from being at the Goodman and being connected in the theater scene. Mm-hmm. So when I got here, we just got some, you know, actors and did some auditioning, and we became like a family really quickly, you know. So we call it an ensemble, but, you know, we were all just getting to know each other. So we just kind of felt together, you know. In fact, what I've done with East Texas is put back the original design team, except for, you know, one person who's gone off to become a major corporate designer. But for the most part, it was just that family atmosphere. Everybody, you know, I talked with Christine Pasquale, our costume designer, how in the first days we were up all night sewing costumes. You know, now she has a staff and they're, you know, they're doing it. But so those things, it was a family thing. It was a spiritual thing. I just think it was a connection of people, just like in any kind of group, you have a spiritual kind of connection. That's what happened.
Ron O.J. Parsons, my guest tonight at the big table. He's a longtime theater director. He's worked at pretty much every theater in Chicago, Goodman, Steppenwolf, Black Ensemble Theater. He is a resident artist at the Court Theater. He's also the artistic director of the new Onyx Theater Project, and his show Apartment 3A is at the Windy City Playhouse, opens on Thursday, and East Texas Hot Links, played by Eugene Lee. I don't know why I get hung up on that. We'll be at the Writers Theater at the end of October. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get the tonight's news. We'll come back and talk about, you know, some of the things in Chicago theater that have changed. He'll talk about how you get butts in seats, getting young people into the theater. We talked a little bit about diversity. A lot of things to talk with Ron O.J. Parson about Chicago theater here on The Download. So stay with us. It's The Download here on 720 WGN Chicago. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Ron O.J. Parson, longtime theater director here in Chicago. 20 years of doing theater plus, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, like 2021, I guess you'd say. It's wow.
He's got a new play. He's directing at the Windy City Playhouse. It's the Chicago premiere of Jeff Daniels, Apartment 3A. Also directing another show, East Texas Hot Links, by Eugene Lee. It's at the Writers Theater later in October. It's a remount of a show you did, 20 years ago with Onyx.
Yeah, we did it in 95 and 98. And actually in the 98 was the year we opened. And that week, James Byrd was dragged by a truck in the county where the play takes place. So that's really something, yeah. So we dedicated it to him.
Was it difficult to do a play like that when there's a current event that's so emotionally charged?
Yeah,
like
it was really hard because, you know, some people were saying, you know, is it relevant? Is that kind of thing? Because it's in the 50s. And we were like, yeah, it's still relevant, of course. And then that happened.
Yeah.
So then we, the post-show discussions, we talked about it. And the fact that it was in East Texas where that happened. So, yeah, it's relevant.
You know, let's talk about post-show discussions. I've found that to be, you know, it almost becomes a sit-in for civility when you talk about, like, the way that the media has gone, where it's very divisive. It's hard to actually have a balanced conversation. What's your take on the post-show discussion? Is it imperative to have one after a show?
Well, I guess it depends on the show. I mean, at court we do them at every preview. So, and it's a different audience out there, the University of Chicago, and the questions are kind of deep, you know? Sometimes you get questions like, you know, how do you remember those lines and all that kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. So I think it depends on the play. I'm curious to see actually with the Windy City Theater, because it's a different audience, what those post-show discussions are like. And, you know, with that open bar, not open bar, but with that bar there, you know, no, I'm just kidding. But, you know, your question, because the plays are a little bit more fun loving, and so you might get a different thing. At court, like in other theaters, they're kind of deep. Like East Texas probably is going to have some real interesting discussions about what I just said, mm-hmm. about is it relevant, what's going on. And you know what's happening? I was talking with my costume designer for another play I'm directing later, Blues for an Alabama Sky at Court Theater, and we were talking about how to compare some of the issues in all of these plays with what's going on today.
Yeah, right.
You know, so being able to now try to find the element or the hook, or so to speak, of what the comparisons are from some of these issues that are still happening in 2016.
I was going to say, I mean, that's
crazy.
That's what's wonderful about the theater,
yeah.
is the ability to really push social issues.
Right.
And that happens all the time.
Right.
But it's amazing to me to see the secular nation notion of the concept that a lot of the issues that playwrights were talking about, whether it be the 40s, 50s, 60s, are still relevant today.
Oh,
I mean,
definitely.
Do you see that as a director? Do you
definitely.
See plays that are they're
no
ripped
doubt.
From the headlines from 20, 50, 20, 30, 40
it
years ago?
It could be ripped from the headlines in the 30s, and something happens today that's the same thing, and you're doing a play that takes place in the 50s, and it's still going on. So that's crazy. Like even like we were talking recently about the Windy City, Apartment 3A. So I guess it's a comedy. But that character is talking about things like AIDS and child molestation and, you know, war and poverty and rape. And, you know, so all those issues are coming into her character, even in the setting of comedy. So that was the trick of trying to find those elements of where we push the comedy, which, you know, best comedy is not pushed. It's just mm-hmm. a situation. But in this play, there's a lot of those, I guess you could call heavy issues that are coming in the midst of her going through what she's going through, having lost her love life has changed. And so she's dealing with that depression and that loneliness and, you know, all these other things coming into to play. So yeah, it's difficult, but most plays you can relate things. You
well,
know,
so. I was just thinking in my head about all this, all the plays you have done.
Yeah,
I mean, in your career of 20 years, you're working constantly, nonstop. I mean, from whether you're
Thank
a producer, whether you're a producer or whether you're an artistic director, whether you're a director. I mean, is the role of an artist, a theater artist in Chicago, especially now, to be sort of a I guess an artist that's pushing the social agenda
for
to,
me,
for you,
for me, definitely. I feel I've always felt that way. I've always felt that way. That you know, when we do this, it's such an important thing in this art world. So any kind of thing in art, if I was a painter, I would want to do that. At theater, when I act, you know, like when we did Waiting for Godot, which I pronounce it Godot, it was happening during the Ferguson, you know, all of that. So these characters were going through something, and we used African-American actors, and we could not be in the rehearsal room without knowing what's going on and putting it into the play, you know, with the, with those characters. And so it, it happened, you know, some of the rehearsals were very emotional, which, and we've had emotional rehearsals with Apartment 3A. And of course, we're going to have them with East Texas Hot Links. So because I'm an emotional, passionate person, sometime to a fault, you know, it gets you in trouble when you're too passionate sometimes. And so we find that in rehearsal that we're, we have to take a break sometimes because we're thinking about, especially in East Texas, we've already in our first couple of days at the table, we were talking about, and since we've been rehearsing, three guys have been shot. Three people have been shot, you know, not only by the police, but the police shot an off-duty cop, you know, the other day. So, it, you can't help it, you know. So you know when you're talking about the characters.
Let me ask you about that. I mean, about emotion. I mean, when you said passion. Sometimes it can be, it can be too much,
that's
or get you in trouble.
Personal, that's
but
my
is
own.
That is that? Per, I mean, but talk about how that that plays out. I mean, as an artist, as a theater artist who leads with sort of putting your emotion on your sleeve and being passionate. How can it get you in trouble?
Well, I think you have to balance it sometimes. You know, you, you are in a play. You know, it is the art that you're doing. So you, you just have to balance it in your own life, you know. You know, I personally, I just feel like when I start a project, actors who have worked with me a lot, they know they're betting on how soon I'm going to start crying, you know. And because it's an emotional thing that we do. Theater is in itself emotional. I have a friend, Oyama, who we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. He told me once that, you know, what we do is different from any other medium, you know, because it's so personal, it's so immediate, and you can't, you know, I always want, and I always say this, I want people to leave the theater talking about the play that they just saw. If it's discussion, that's one thing. If it's disagreement, especially this play, again, going back to Apartment 3A, there's issues of God. If, is God real? Is he here? Is he not here? Now, where would you find that in a light comedy, like you say, where they have this serious issue about God? And what if he comes back? And, you know, so that mixture of the two things is really, that's challenging. But just the other day in rehearsal, one of the characters, he had been doing it. Really, he had been doing it. Hello, guys. Hey.
Passerby's
out here. He had been doing it, in, you know, trying the comedic aspect of it. And I said, you know, look what you're saying. What's happening to you? You know, it's a monologue about losing your mom and seeing her in a dream and, you know, her coming back and talking to you and you doubting the existence of God because of that. That's not funny, you know? And so we found some other elements in that monologue.
Right.
And then in the next scene, though, it goes back to comedy. So that's the thing about these plays and good plays like this that can take you on that roller coaster ride. So as far as what I was saying about, you know, balancing it, you know, you can't get too lost in it because it is a play and it is comedy. So we do want people to laugh, but we also want them to feel, you know, heartfelt about what they heard. And I always say, this is another thing that I always say, that I want people to feel the play as much as hear it and see it. And if that's the case, especially in a place like Windy City, which is so close, you're so comfortable that you cannot help feel what these players, these actors are doing. And I worked with deaf actors in Rochester, New York, years ago before I actually moved to Chicago. And they taught me a lot about the body and how, you know, they can express themselves physically. And I think that's kind of what I go for in most of my plays is it's a well, you know, the experience should be so well-rounded that they're not just seeing or hearing a play, they're feeling it. And that's kind of what I mean about being passionate. If I'm passionate, I think I can get that into my actors. And I think we just feel what we're doing is strong.
Let me ask you, I mean, Chicago, you mentioned Chicago and Onyx Theater was built in 1994 when you guys became a company. You only stuck around for a couple of years. But you talked about how, you know, the theater companies all kind of were in their own little buckets. They were in their own little categories.
Right. Yeah.
Has that changed? Has Chicago become more diverse?
I think that's changed. It's become more diverse, but it's also become more theaters are, like, trying to co-produce. You know, say you can't afford certain things and you can get with a company and, you know, co-produce something or maybe do it at your theater and then do it at that theater. I'm trying to do more of that that kind of aspect. Mm-hmm. And then again, I have to, you know, feel like it's more open to do that, you know, whereas before it was kind of like you say, everybody was in their own
silo,
world. Yeah. And like I was saying earlier about this project I'm trying to do, I think that's what I'm going to need to do too, to find theaters that are willing to accept some of these young people that we're trying to get involved in the theater. You know, we're calling it Beyond the Stage, which we're going to try to introduce young people of color to elements of set design, sound design, light design, that kind of thing.
Why are people of color not why are they not into theater?
That is actually a good question, and that's the thing we were talking about earlier, is that a lot of the parents don't want their kids to go into the arts, you know, it's because it's not known for being, you know, very lucrative or you can't get a lot of work and this and that. And ironically, though, you can in the backstage, you know, in the lighting design, set design, even if it's not theater, there's corporate lighting designers and things like that. So it's just, I guess we want to introduce people to a new outlook on that. The young people, usually it's actors. They want to emulate acting.
Right.
And so basically this program, through the Three Arts Foundation, we're trying to get new people, young people, to see what's available beyond the stage.
Well, I always think about this because there's always been this push and pull with theater companies to be able to get young audiences in seats. I mean, that's what Windy City Playhouse is trying to do.
Exactly.
With 3A. That's what others have tried to do. You see this with initiatives. You know, and a lot of the stories that resonate with young people are going to be told through music.
Right.
Or maybe they're told through movies.
Right, exactly.
Why do you think, as a longtime theater director, that you're not able to get younger people to sink their teeth into the stage?
Well, I think it was, you know, a lot of it was the non-diversity. You know, the fact that there weren't plays or people they could see that they could relate to. In fact, a friend of mine told me, you know, I was trying to get him to come see The Mountaintop, which is a show I directed a few years ago about Martin Luther King and this angel that comes to his room. And he had come to other plays of mine. He was like, man, I don't want to see that old stuff. I don't want to see that, you know, the old timey, you know, stuff. And so he came to see that, which was a kind of a combination. But the elements, the technical elements on it, because the young people are so into social media, you know, for one thing. So everything's everything's on their phone, this and that. So this play had a little bit of that element in it, you know, with some video and things like that. And he loved it. So I think it's people, the young people, some of them have a perception of theater that is just not something that they, you know, think about going.
But you have situations like the breakthrough hit with Hamilton, where you're seeing much more of a crossover. I mean, is that what it takes? Is for shows that resonate at that level, at Broadway level, or does it take the stories that are being told on even storefront theater stages to be more representative?
You hit the nail on the head. That's exactly it. Like I was saying at court when I first did. I did Wait Until Dark. And now that's a play that it doesn't say what race people are. It's in Greenwich Village in 1965. Now, I was in Greenwich Village as a kid in the 60s. You know, I'm that old. You know, I was a little kid. And you did see different things. You saw different people. And so why not, you know, we had, you know, the actress who played the lead blind woman, if anybody knows that play, was Filipino, MJoy Gavino. And I actually sought in the audience some Filipino audience members. And I said, "How, you know, why did you come?" It was because of her, because we saw her. We knew she was in the play. And that carried over into other things and other places. Now, we have a lot of programs with schools, with high schools and things, which is how I got involved in theater, with them coming to my school. And so we do a lot of that, and I think that that's happening. I'm also a company member at Timeline. I haven't talked about that. But we have a
great theater company.
Well, we have an active living history program that goes into the schools and gets these young people to read the plays. Core theater, too, we all. And I think that's a big thing that the younger theaters, storefronts, and everybody is doing. I heard Amy talking about it at Windy City, that I met some of their interns and stuff. And I think that's what we have to do. We have to begin to do that. This Apartment 3A is such a diverse cast, and it's great, you know, because again, it's characters that anybody can be. Everybody falls in love, you know, whether you're big, small, black, white, male, female, you have love in your life.
All right, my last question for you. Yep. I mean, you came here in the 90s because you auditioned for a Goodman show.
Right.
You got it.
Got
you
it.
Left Buffalo. You left New York City.
Yep.
You've worked in other towns, but what is it about Chicago? What kept you here for 20 years doing theater? And not only just theater, but what kept you in this town as a working and a professional?
Well, that's funny. That's funny because, yeah, that's true. I just think it's the I fell in love with the city when I came here a couple of times before I thought about moving here just to visit. And it's on 90, the Route 90, right? And I lived in Buffalo. I lived on Route 90, off of Route 90. So when I first drove here, I right from my house, got on 90, ended up in Chicago.
On the expressway, right?
And I fell in love with it. And, you know, just the, not only the theater, but all the art that's here, you know. And just recently, in the last few years, even though I've been in court all those years, I really didn't appreciate or know about all the art in Hyde Park and the, you know, the people, the artists that I've met, you know, and the art that I've seen. And so the community, like we were talking earlier, the difference between New York and Chicago. I just think it's very, you know, family oriented, you know, the African festivals that they have down there in Hyde Park and, you know, just exploring that. So I just fell in love with the energy of the city.
Ron O.J. Parson, longtime theater director. His new play is the Windy City Playhouse. The Chicago premiere of Jeff Daniels' Apartment 3A opens on Thursday. He's also doing East Texas Hot Links, a play by Eugene Lee. It's at the Writers Theater later in October. Ron, great to see you. Thanks for coming and be my guest.
Hey, man, it's great to be here. I'll come anytime you want me.